next case is 9859 University of MedNet versus Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Ohio. Arbitration agreement based on public policy. It seems like it's a very subjective sort of thought. And I guess I'm wondering what kind of rule would we establish that would give guidance?
Well, basically, that is the argument that was used in part by the opposition. They cited a 170-year-old case that public policy is an unruly horse. And once you get on it, you never know when you're going to be able to get off. In response to that, Your Honor, I looked at the decisions of this court that have been rendered in the last 5 to 10 years. I looked at the decision authored by yourself on the subject of uninsurability of intentional torts that was based on a common law established public policy. Decisions with respect to judicial proceedings immunity, decisions relating to defamation, qualified privilege, for hiring patrol officers, at-will situations when there were retaliatory discharges. All of those well-reasoned cases were based upon public policy. Public policy that had its genesis in common law. So, to be sure, one could argue that there is no basis in public policy. And 170 years ago, that might have been the case, but I think this court has relied very heavily on principles of public policy established by a common law, and that there is indeed the very cornerstone of many principles that are applied by this court case after case. So, I don't think it would be creating a problem to insist in this particular case, Judge Piper, the exact public policy that was violated was that the award provided really double damages, recovery, and contract case. And in order to answer that question, probably would take more than 15 minutes to go into detail. But basically, what we have here is a 15-year contract between a group of Euclid physicians and a demo. Few physicians will provide exclusive medical services in East Cleveland for 15 years. And every going by, that led to arbitration. The only expert to testify on damages in this case, Mr. Everett, used the following formula. The only expert to address damages and the opposition to this in their fellow briefs that the court relied for the arbitration based on Mr. Everett's testimony. And this testimony went through 5 years, 95, until the contract termination date, December 31, 99. And each year, he said, if this contract had not been breached, here's what your total revenue would be. And incidentally, this is a capitation contract, about $50 a month per patient, regardless of whether they need service or not. So it's easy enough to put a top line, here's what the revenue should have been, and he projected increasing members. Then he would take expenses and mitigation, and then he deducts from the revenue what he thinks the revenue is going to be because of the reduced enrollment because of the breach by the HMO. So far, so good. Nothing wrong with that.
So the public policy that's been violated is a miscalculation of damages?
No, absolutely not. Privacy. I'm sorry, I took so long to answer your question. For the first 3 years, he would take like $18 million a year, but because of a projection of damages, we're only going to get 16, therefore two damages. He used two models. In one of the models, for the last 3 years, he put zero. And his sworn testimony, there's no question about it, I have it in the record, he was asked to assume that the contract terminated, that the HMO ceased operations for the last 3 years, and instead of saying the difference between what the income should have been and what it would have been, he put zero down here. Here's what the income should have been. Contract non-performance, and therefore he said the damages is the difference between what it should have been and zero. In other words, he was asked to assume and did assume that there would be a total non-performance in one model for the last 3 years of the contract. In the other model, he was asked to assume and did assume that there would be a total non-performance during the last 21 months of the contract. Even so, when it was raised in closing argument and throughout the judicial proceedings, that if you're going to get damages for total non-performance, then you terminate the contract.
Had the,
both performance and damages for non-performance.
Had the arbitration been permitted to be completed, would there have been a ruling on that point?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Was it before the arbitrators?
Yes.
To terminate the contract before December 31, 1999, if you assess damages?
Yes, Justice. It is pointed out by the opposition properly, though, that the initial request for arbitration did not ask for termination. Both sides agreed that it was a non-terminable contract by the terms.
And it still goes on today. You're still paying.
No, it still goes on today. There's enrollment today.
Okay. You've answered that question. Let me ask one more, and then, because I only had one other one that bothered me. I haven't had a chance to review the contract, if it's in the record, between MedNet and Blue Cross or whoever it is now. And I recognize that they are not in competition. So take that as my understanding of the case. Is there anything built into that contract like a covenant not to compete?
No, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, the Court of Appeals found that they were entitled to compete, and they do compete. MedNet provides not only services for the medical mutual HMO, but for Prudential, for QualChoice.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, is there anything that says that MedNet cannot set up a separate business in competition with the other parties of the contract?
No, I believe not.
So that you're not claiming that they breached the contract?
Yes. The claim that was put forth by Blue Cross at the time was that when University Hospital bought the physician,
I understand.
Made those physicians employees and enforced them to send their patients not to Euclid, which is next door, but to university, that caused the drop in enrollment.
Okay, yeah, I understand that. And that, does that bring about a breach of the contract? And if so, who's the breaching party? They just had their business purchased. And they were directed by their new masters, if you will, to send the patients to a different place.
The primary threat in the case was trying to determine what caused the drop in enrollment. It was Blue Cross's position throughout the arbitration.
understand that argument. My concern is whether or not you are claiming that they in any way breached the contract. All right, so really the fact that the contract still is in existence is a fact of contract law because there's been no breach by them.
Yes, and the only the importance of the contract being in existence, Your Honor, from our standpoint, is that what we have here is a damage award that provides damages for total non-performance during a period of performance. And what the opposition has argued throughout when in the court it was constantly pointed out, well, if you're going to give damages for total non-performance, if you're going to assume zero enrollees during this later period of time, then you have to terminate the contract. You can't have both. And it's the fundamental public policy of contract damages that you don't get delivery and non-delivery. Damages for non-delivery and delivery.
Your opponents point out, though, counsel, that two things, that the damages, Abernathy's calculation of damages did not take into account, you say he didn't account at all for the continued capitation of remaining members, and yet I read in the brief that indeed he did not calculate damages. He excluded from the damages those rates that would be accountable for folks who stay in the plan, but that he only calculated from the loss. And any time we're doing future damages, it has to be a kind of a calculation, an actuarial projection, and then reduced for present value. But they say that part of the evidence here, apparently there was no evidence by your client on damages, either for your breach or to challenge the calculations by Abernathy, yet there was some employee of Blue Cross who was down at the Department of Insurance projecting that the damages or that the amount, number of patients in the plan would be zero in short order.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Here I have page 714 of the transcript and later I could say where this is my opponent asking some of the final questions, and this is the only
of Abernathy.
This is Abernathy. And his answer is, assuming that HMO Delta Ohio ceases operations in regards to MedMed by March 31, 1998, my opinion is they will suffer damage to saving MedMed of $18 million some odd dollars as an estimation of damage. Now, his sole opinion in the second model is based on the assumptions of ceased operations.
But
of 1998.
But it's was an argument made? Now, arbitrators, we want this contract terminated? Because I read that nobody, your client didn't ask for termination. Maybe there was something in it for everybody to continue, but he calculated the damages. There was no challenge to that, I gather.
Justice Cook, I don't believe that my predecessor counsel anticipated at the outset, when there was an arbitration demand, that there would be double damages awarded in the contract. If they had, they probably would have said, well, if there's going to be double damages, you have to terminate.
Okay.
But it was raised in the closing argument, where it was pointed out that if you do this, this is double damages, and there has to be set off because you have performance and advantages for non-performance.
Counsel.
Yes.
Were all the economic questions answered by the arbitrators?
Absolutely not, Justice. I mean, the really sad thing about this is I don't believe that we would be here today if the opposition had not rushed to court on a partial award.
What did the parties understand that there were economic issues left hanging when they appealed it to the Common Pleas Court?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There couldn't have been any question because the arbitrators pointed out that if these economic issues aren't resolved, we'll come back to us and we'll appoint a magistrate who will be able to resolve them.
They specifically left issues that they would decide to be settled.
Absolutely.
By the parties?
And I think the second most important point in this case is there was no final award, and if there had not been a premature rush to court during a timeout period when the arbitration panel was still exercising jurisdiction, time of the war.
Was that brought to the attention of the Common Pleas Court?
Yes, it was into the Court of Appeals, and the argument was rejected.
The like so many awards, though, as you know, Mr. Young, that it's a matter of calculation. Does that make the award not final? And I'm thinking in terms of quite often we have awards of attorney's fees. It's the award. You know, it's not the later calculation. It sounds that this award left for later certain calculations, and the arbitrator said we deal with that should there be any quarrel about the production of the records and the later calculations.
I see my time with this, but Justice Cook, I have to tell you that that is not with the arbitrator. She will read the award. It wasn't just a ministerial question of calculation, because I have an arbitrator writing that all the time.
Right.
It wasn't just a ministerial act. There were a large number of economic issues that were unresolved, and they were to be resolved by the panel before a magistrate. So there's absolutely no question that this was not a final complete award. It should not have gone to court. And if it had not been prematurely appealed, we probably would be here today.
Mr. Young, let me follow up on the question of whether the issue was raised in the trial court. As you know, the appellees claimed that it was not, that actually the issue there was whether the arbitrator had exceeded their authority. Now it's become something different. I'll let you have a chance to respond to that.
Yes, and I could cite in the multiple occasions where both sides raised that exact issue in the trial court and in the Court of Appeals, and it's been found in the Court of Appeals brief. There's no question that the issue was raised that was an incomplete partial award, and it was premature appeal, and it was also raised the fact that there was double damages because of the fact that the damages were not performed during the performance. Both of those issues were raised. I might say to Justin Meyer that, you know, whether I would raise them in the precise same fashion that they did may be different, but they were raised.
What about Mr. Abernathy testifying with the premise that the contract ends?
Your Honor, first of all, the any future damage calculation, that is the only component of the award that I think is viewed on the government. The present damage is under the timeline of the award, but with respect to future damages, necessarily you must look at the snapshot of what the facts are at the time that is presented to the arbitrator. And this issue of how you calculate damages, what is the reasonable assumption
But it was the calculation that got to zero, not the requirement that the contract be terminated. But he said that the decline would produce a zero.
It is absolutely false that there was any determination by the staff contract terminated. What he said was that the enrollment, which is totally within the control of Blue Cross, was going to decline because they were taking patients away from MedPath because they were refusing to market MedPath. No advertising for several years. Because they were telling their sales force not to offer Cleveland as a product. And all of this came out at the hearing. But most importantly, in terms of affirming this award, is that a senior actuary, in response to inquiries from the Ohio Department of Insurance, the regulators who regulate their business, said, why there's such a precipitous decline in the enrollment. They asked that question in September of 95, less than 4 months before the arbitration. And without consideration of litigation consequences, Nancy Kugler said to the insurance department, because we believe that the enrollment will decline to zero at the end of 1997.
Is this in the record of this case? I mean, was this presented to the arbitrators?
It was presented to the arbitrators, and it is in the record, and it is in the supplement in terms of testimony, and I refer you to the testimony of Nancy Kugler, which is that the MedNet supplement pages 135 to 137. She opined to the insurance department that based upon sound actuarial principles, we believe that this enrollment is going to decline in December of
2017. We haven't yet talked about the limited nature of this proceeding, the proceeding to confirm or vacate of an arbitration award and the narrow and limited review, but assuming we may even be beyond that in most of our discussion here, but is what went on with regard to damages on behalf of Blue Cross at the arbitration? They didn't present a witness, but did they just essentially cross-examine Mr. Abernathy?
Respectfully, Your Honor, they did. They presented Mr. Finger, who was an accountant, and Mr. Finger opined differently than Mr. Abernathy. Furthermore, they cross-examined Mr. Abernathy, and perhaps most significantly, this very distinguished panel of arbitrators chaired by David Greer cross-examined both experts, intentionally, to satisfy themselves that what they had been presented was in fact accurate.
How do you respond to their contention that this award really wasn't final? It was premature to have a concern.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, with respect to the fundamental the driving issue in this case, breach of the 1985 agreement, which is in paragraph Roman 1 of the arbitration award, it is undisputed that that is final. Mr. Young has argued that somehow if the economic issue had been resolved and there had been further discussion of that, that perhaps there would have been a recasting or a resolution of things that he now finds unacceptable about that award. But the fact of the matter is, it was a money damage award, there was no contemplation of exchange of information, and it was final, no question.
Well, they didn't
check for the economic issue.
Yeah, they didn't challenge that there was a breach, did they? Was the arbitrator that
didn't? No, they did not. I might say on that issue, they didn't challenge that there was a breach, they didn't challenge that there was causation, they didn't challenge the methodology.
The damages that they feel.
Stay with that before you go to the next issue. You have a $14 million plus finding here. Is this not akin to the finding of liability, not a full assessment of damages, ergo no final appealable order?
No, well, I would go on to the economic issues, but with respect to the breach of the that agreement, There is no dispute.
Okay, I understand that. But the whole arbitration hadn't run its course yet, had it? Would there have been set-offs against the $14
million? No, and that's very helpful, Your Honor. Mr. Young suggested that there was a request for set-off or a request that the arbitrator terminate the agreement. Respectfully, he was not there, but the record is clear, and it's in our supplement. There was no, absolutely no request of the arbitrator terminate this contract or to provide settlement, not only with respect to the counter demand of the day, but in the closing, we had a lengthy closing argument, and we also had lengthy closing briefs. Neither in the brief nor in the argument did counsel for Blue Cross ask the arbitrator to terminate the contract or to set off against the continuation of the contract.
Okay, so you've gotten $14.4 million, and you say that's a complete damage award. That makes it appealable. So if they terminated the contract today, you'd have no further claim.
That's correct. That is correct. And here's the problem. They say that there should be a termination of a contract when they never asked for it. But most significantly, what was presented to the arbitrators was that by Blue Cross's own choice and their failure to market, they were going to drop this enrollment down to zero. And the point is, they controlled that enrollment. There's no issue with double recovery here. If they carried out what they intended, Mr. Young said it's undisputed. There is no evidence in this record whatsoever. This contract.
So you're prepared to walk away from the contract today?
We are prepared to walk away from the contract today. Yes. All right. With respect to the economic issue, and really it's a question of analysis, the economic issues that were presented, and I think that is most significant here, because with respect to finality, as that gets interpreted in 2711MD, the finality is upon the subject matter that has been submitted to the arbitrator. And as the Court of Appeals found, based upon what was submitted to the arbitrator, they provided complete and final relief. They provided declaratory relief on all issues involving economic issues, and they also provided mandatory injunctive relief as to those. Now, what they went on to say is that the parties have the opportunity, if they choose, to reconvene the panel to carry out what is specifically provided for in the economic issue award. It is our position, Your Honor, that does not somehow affect the finality of the award, because complete relief was granted, and most significant, the relief that Blue Cross outlined to the arbitrator is precisely the relief that the arbitrators adopted. And so now, in a monumental gotcha, Blue Cross is saying, even though the arbitrators did exactly as we requested, somehow now they complain that there is no finality here, when in fact there is. No, I did not say that it's not true. I said there is no evidence in the record. What they really are saying is that you should, with the advantage of hindsight, even though this is a future damage case, and even though the arbitrators were asked to opine on it back in January of 96, they are entitled to look at what in fact is occurring in 98 or 99. And that is my point. I'm not disputing that there is an existing, that there is a relationship, and it is, and at Blue Cross's choice is ongoing, because we have no control over that. So
what was the range of evidence testimony with respect to the damage before this?
We have, Your Honor, Blue Cross for some time. But in the midst of trial, we got their marketing plan for several years. And in studied detail, it identified what their plans were to destroy Cleveland East and move those enrollees in Super Blue HMO, a new for-profit HMO that they want to start. That's one. Number two,
what was the dollar?
Was the range of dollars? Yes. We requested, Your Honor, $18.3 million.
What was your testimony?
The testimony was that. And the award was for $14.4 million. We're not sure why, how the arbitrator,
what was their testimony?
Their testimony was, I believe, an acknowledgement to the range of 2 to 3 minutes. That there was a breach, and that it would be 2 to 3 million of max. So that is the range, the 18.3 to 2 to 3 million.
Was there anything in that contract that required the providers to send the people to whom they were giving care, who were policyholders, to Euclid Hospital?
No.
There was no specific provision that you had to send them to this particular hospital.
That's correct.
Is there any question here? Was the University Hospital ever made a party to this?
No.
So is there any question of tortious interference with performance of a contract? On the basis that they went and purchased and had them, in effect, breach the contract, or maybe not breach the contract, but switch the business to their hospital?
No, Your Honor, I mean, there was no breach of contract. And Mr. Young has acknowledged that they're not.
Because there was no direction that they had to send their patients to a particular place.
That's right. And I will say that there was a companion case which Blue Cross was originally a party to,
Mr. Young, you've used your time, which may take 30 seconds.
Three 30 seconds, Your Honor. Two things I want to point out. If you read page 3 of the arbitrator's award, it isn't just a ministerial calculation, and it isn't unlimited. They recognize that there are undetermined economic factors, and they recognize what happens as to how they get determined. So it's much more extensive than Mr. Young indicated.
Was that the fact of the time that you're
I can't answer that. I wasn't there, Your Honor. But no matter what, there were undetermined issues, and the panel preserved jurisdiction and said three things you can do. You can negotiate them away, you can have a magistrate, you return to us, and we'll continue the arbitration. Those are the three alternatives that are set forth in this award. And I would say under those circumstances, it's certainly an impartial award. And they gave 60 days to go back and let them know. And before, in just a short, right after they did that, they went to court. They didn't wait 60 days. Well, the court had the time out there.
I'm not clear on how those other economic issues would affect the $14 million award. Is there a suggestion that they could, that they would?
In two respects, Your Honor. First of all, because during closing argument, opposed predecessor counsel argued, if you do what they're asking you to do, you're giving damages for non-performance and performance too.
Well, but if we decide that issue against your client,
if we decide
there are no double damages.
If you decide that against me, that there are no double damages.
But you don't want to do
it. But be that as it may, then the second issue is all of these other economic issues of who pays for what affect the profitability projection. How can you anticipate damages if you don't know what the expenses are? Here's the income, deduct expenses. all those other economic factors are spent on it. So how in the world can you have a deficit award when it's uncertain as to what's the expenses and who has to pay for what? So in that respect, it clearly affects the totality of the award. The final point is, in terms of their willingness to terminate today, I think it's unfortunate that that comment is made. First of all, there's been a whole year of damages. They made a whole year of damages at zero, number one. And number two, with 25,000 enrollees, to say they could terminate tomorrow is quite fair. And to say that it's solely going forward is Blue Cross's request. Again, it's not in the record, it's not accurate, it's unfair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.